down to the left side. We will survive in this county wilderness. Swimming through the waters above and down like a rebel fish. Jungle is specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people, we'll turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom with all thy getting and an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to abitumi.com/timeforanawakening. That's abitumi.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there. Or you can download the TuneIn radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream your program live, even into your car if you had a Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs. One Time for an Awakening, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the BB Tumi. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So, again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:07 here in the city of Philadelphia on this wintry Friday evening here on the Freestyle Friday edition of Time for an Awakening Open Forum. You can join the conversation and get something started by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:12 here in the city of Philadelphia. Before we get started with our program, I want to welcome my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia, 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you feeling now?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. You know, the usual with the chill. I thought we were getting past it for a minute, but I'll wait. I felt the March wind for a second there.
Yeah. But, it's know, February. We got a long way to go.
But that being aside, I guess this has been an interesting week, as usual, as far as trying to keep up where we are as a people. I've been trying to wrestle with that, you know, like black folks, what we going to do, you know, kind of thing. But other than that, I guess I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, with this, you know, with the time for Awakening audience, how you know, the open forum, where it will carry us and what subjects and what, how we will inform ourselves in order to be more prepared to take power steps instead of baby steps.
You know, Richard, one of the tools that, you know, Brother Sam Collins last week, journalist and author out of D.C., Sam P.K. Collins, the young brother mentioned a lot of things last week that was key for me. One of the things he mentioned was about us working together to solve these problems, just like you said. But the, one of the tools is media, just like he's in. He's a journalist. You know, let's do it this way. Before we kind of kick things around, kick some things around, I see Brother Otis put something in the chat room. Maybe he wants to comment on it, kick things off for us. Let's go to him. Let's go to Newport News. Can you hear me? Newport News, can you hear me? Brother Otis Griffin, can you hear me? Let's put him back. I see he's in that room there. Maybe we can get him to come on if he can get his mic together. Richard, Brother Collins mentioned the use of the media, which he, what is he saying there? I have time. I don't understand that. Maybe you understand that, Richard. Ain't no problem. The use of media and, you know, being that he said he was 32, he was talking about social media and it was a lot of good things out there. You heard him mention that.
Right.
But a lot of them are not working together. And it might be for several reasons. But I think if we form, instead of fingers, I think if we closed and formed a fist, it would be a lot more effective because there's a lot of information out there and there's several good programs and I've heard several of them. But the ideal of working together haven't seemed to strike home with a lot of folks. And they and they don't have to be older necessarily. They could be younger.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the more and more, you know, that we reach out and people come on, I think it's an effective tool to use against what we're dealing with. Information is always effective against misinformation.
Right. Right.
Couple of things I want to throw out there. It's Freestyle Friday, so folks can mention anything they want, to be honest, and we can talk about it. If a couple of things happening, Rich. I mean, you know about that a decision today in the young man that got murdered up there in Minneapolis.
No, I didn't hear yet.
I think the cop got 2 years.
Oh, yeah. How many?
Two.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So?
I think that was something that Brother Otis had put in the chat. I hear you now.
Oh, sorry, I had the phone in. I just wanted to chime in and tell you, that's one of the things I put in the chat. I tried to put the tweet in there telling you, this is what the judge had to say. Prior to deviating from what we've been told for the last 20 years is, judges don't have no power because of mandatory sentences and taking all the decisions out of their hands. That's what the claim is. Listen to this woman, what this woman said. I recognize there would be those who disagree with this sentence. That I granted a significant downward departure does not in any way diminish Dante Wright's life. The judge says after Kim Porter is sentenced to 24 months. The minimum, for what I understand, over some of the reading we should have, was supposed to be 5 to 7.
Yeah, that's what
but
I was hearing.
He gave this woman less than a third of the mandatory time that they've been telling us for 25 damn years with Joe, with this slow Joe crime bill, that is mandatory sentencing. There is no discretion from the judge. I just want to chime in with that. There's a whole lot of mess going on in this country. As a matter of fact, I saw another one from an activist that's down in Houston. I put that one in first. Three of the top judges in Harris County alone, this is just Harris County with Houston, Texas, 500 people stuck in jail because they can't pay cash. Watch this. That's the number one. The second and third each had 300 and some people a day. A day. That's from January the 2nd to January the 8th, a week. 500, mostly black defendants, because they can't pay bail for petty crimes. But they tell us that getting more black faces is going to help us. That's all I want to chime in with, brothers. Looking forward to the rest of the conversation.
Now, a couple things I want to say before you leave, Brother Otis. Now, those guys are sitting in jail. You know what happens. After they sit there for about 8 months, the public defender come to them and say, listen, you know, you up for this or that, or, you know, you can go to jail for 2 or 3 years. Just say if it was a little petty crime.
Oh, yeah, the prosecutor's going to over-indict them from the start.
Yeah, you can go to jail for two.
Stuff that the evidence don't support, but I want to throw this in for you, too, and then let you have your platform back.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Here's the other part of it. In that week's time alone, out of the people, just the 1,226 people that those three judges, three black females now, recently appointed, just the 1,200-some people that we got for that, the county supposedly made somewhere between $3.1 and $3.5 million off of housing those people for that 1 week alone. Incarceration. Along with what you're talking about.
Your voice faded a little bit. Say that again.
Huh?
Your voice faded a little bit. Say that again.
I said, along with what you're talking about, they are really not forced people to give up their rights because you don't want to take a risk on rolling the dice and going for a jury.
Mm-hmm.
Out. And then they got rid of and are making money off of just housing you. Not on convicting you, just housing you. It's a scam, huh?
Well, Brother Otis, listen, it's going to be criminal justice reform. That's what Biden said. That's what the black lawmakers of the Black Caucus have been pushing for, criminal justice reform. What is that? The owner of the Patriots was out there with some, Jay-Z and others. It's criminal justice reform.
Don't get me started on that. I fought with Isaiah Washington and all of them over that because what they're calling reform is decaging. In other words, we're not going to keep you in the cages we built with private prisons and the public ones that we got off in these rural areas so white folks can have an economy built on caging you. We're going to give you an electronic monitor. And what they don't tell you about them is a couple of states like Alabama don't even wait till you get convicted to give you the monitor. If you go to court and get a court date, you get the monitor, and the minimum cost of that is $10 a day. Now, if you can't pay a damn $50 or $150 fine, how are you going to pay $10 a day to keep a monitor on? And then if you're convicted of what they say, the software and some of them are messing up. So even if you're charged with leaving outside of the areas you're supposed to be in, that's another charge that doesn't even go through the court. The company, the private industry that's doing it, can charge you with a crime, even if the software is faulty. This country is crazy, man.
It's crazy. It's more of the same. Sounds like to me.
Well, it's the same system we started with, ain't it? The future of slave act. That's why you cannot reform a system built on crimes against humanity. If you don't replace and rebuild, quote, policing, we're going to continue with this same system they got.
Yeah.
Lock them up, cage them, make money, dispose of them as quickly as you can. And whatever you do, don't give them a damn chance to vote. Then they might get enough sense to start voting against both parties.
And I would add, it's also looking at the 13th Amendment as a part of
Yes. Yeah, well, I'd like to throw this one in because y'all got a good program, and I dig in him every chance I get. That's why I don't like academics like that Daryl Scott is at Howard University that told me in his years of expertise, the 13th Amendment, exception clause has no material impact, has had none on the lives of black men. I asked him what damn country he's been living in. Because I know damn well it's affected my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Be strong, brothers. Keep doing that work.
Talk to you. You know, Richard, he, that, the cop that got the 2 years. Now, I think she's been in jail. So she might serve less than 2 years. And there's a good chance she probably will. But in the same state of Minnesota, if you recall, that it was a black guy that had a white partner. And I think the white woman ran up on the vehicle. And he didn't know what it was. And he shot her, killed her. Mm. And he got 12 years.
Right.
I'm not mistaken. One of the callers can correct me if I'm wrong. He got 12 years in jail. I think Michael Vick was accused of fighting dogs. He wasn't on that property. He owned the property where dogs was fighting. And he served 3 years in jail for potentially killing a dog. So, you could just weigh those things. Couple of things I want to mention, Richard. You seen that Loretta Lynch took is going to represent the NFL against Brian Flores in his lawsuit.
Yeah, I've been hearing about this.
About discrimination. Before I go to that, I just want to just some food for thought. About an hour ago, Biden gave an address about what's going on in Ukraine and Russia potentially invading. And they showed video footage of Bilkin and Linda Thomas Greenfield. They might have been over there. I don't know where they were. They was at some type of negotiating table or something like that. I don't know. They may was appearing with other Europeans because Kamala Harris was over there also.
Oh, yeah.
Let me play about 40 seconds of what he said in the beginning. Because, for black folks here, I was curious to how they feel in reference to this. Let me play this with you.
The second was the latest in a series of calls over the past many months with the heads of state of our NATO allies and the European Union. To bring them up to date on what the United States thinks is the current state of affairs and what's likely to happen in Ukraine in the coming days, to ensure that we continue to remain in lockstep, that is, the European Union and NATO. Despite Russia's efforts to divide us at home and abroad, I can affirm that has not happened. The overwhelming message of both calls was one of unity, determination, and resolve.
Now, Richard,
mm.
He stated both that we here in the United States have both unity and determination and resolve with the European Union and our quote-unquote NATO allies.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Lloyd Austin was over there, Linda Thomas Greenfield, and Harris. Now, that NATO, let me just read some of the things about. Now, the European Union, we had already discussed that before, the nations in that European Union, which the United States is a part of. Let me read the members of NATO. It's currently 30 members. Albania, Belgium, Bulgaria, Croatia, the Czech Republic, Denmark, Estonia, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Iceland, Italy, Latvia, Lithuania, Montenegro, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Slovakia, Slovenia, Spain, United Kingdom, and the United States. I didn't know those people were allies with black folks, black nations, or anybody. In fact, several of those nations, including the United States, just like Brother Otis said a minute ago, is guilty of crimes against humanity. They have robbed black people of their culture, robbed black people of their lands on the continent, and robbed black people of their treasures. And some of them still have treasures that they refuse to return. So what do I have in common with them? What kind of lockstep and we're together? Who is he talking about? He's speaking for you? Now, maybe he is with some black folks. He might be speaking for them, because it's clear that he's speaking for Kamala Harris, and that he's speaking for Lloyd Austin, and that he's speaking for Linda Thomas, or Wright Green, Thomas Green. I think it's Thomas Greenfield. It's clear he's speaking for them. But do they represent your interests? Do they speak for you? Do they represent you? You know, just your thoughts. I was just throwing that out there before we kind of move into.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is the symbolism. You know, without the the politics of it, right? Right now, what's that? The UN ambassador, the vice president, and excuse me, and the general, right? Is that what he is? What is his name?
You talking about Austin?
Austin.
He got some type of cabinet post. But you know what? Don't get me there. I get right off the bat. I don't know his position.
I guess that's Secretary of State. No, it's not Secretary of State. Yeah, it's
Secretary of Defense or something. He's something. I guess I can pull it up, but he's something. He got a cabinet position.
But that here, what's interesting is the movement into this white space. This is the way I'm characterizing it. It may not be the correct way to make an analysis. But here's these black positions moving into white space to save the United States four-star general, Secretary of Defense, to be able to deal with this Eastern European front, which, you know, I'm not adept at what is actually the fear, other than Russia, you know, believes that country belongs to them, and they are willing to make sure that they, you know, get back in alignment with it. And United States is saying that they don't. And what strikes me is that, was that last week or the week before last, when we had coups, the military in, was that in Mali, Guinea-Bissau, black countries, you didn't get no black high, these black symbols of representatives speaking to them.
Saying anything about, exactly.
Nothing.
Or making comments, and not to cut you off, because he said a couple days ago that Ukraine has a right to its own sovereignty. Mm-hmm. So what about the countries that you just mentioned?
And they're supporting, in these African countries, they're saying that the military taking over as a representation, and it's still tenuous. I'm not 100% pure, but it seems that the people right now, the young people of those African countries, wanted the government change, and the military who are trained by the U.S., not excluding that, all those countries over there, AFRICOM has trained them. And I'm not moving away from your initial question. I'm just showing how the symbolism works, right? In this moment, when you have three of these top offices, UN, Vice President, and Defense Secretary, are, and with a white president, should it be that simple? Are saying that they're going in to help to defend a white country from another white actor, which all the names that you read, all of those countries are part of
NATO.
NATO seem to be all white countries.
Certainly.
Right? Where all of them over in the European area, except for the United States. Right? They're there with this white image, black image. But here, when there's this populist movement needing black people solidarity, image-wise, support, you have the United Nations representative, who said Greenfield. That's her name, Greenfield.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they should be, from a distance, not going there, that they should that the military shouldn't take over in the interest of the people, what the people want. That's the first setup for me, you know, the symbolic references. If for a black child watching this, what they're going to be watching is black power protecting white interests. Right. That's the cartoon. Now the undergirding is, you know, United States don't go anywhere unless it's protecting its national interests. So what would be the national interest over there that Russia has that they would bring them to support, maybe even use this as an excuse? And we do have that they have used excuses. What was that thing in Iraq? Weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
That was an excuse, right? To go in and wreak havoc to a society. Libya. An excuse to go in and wreak havoc. So here they're going into a white country. And what's the undergirding there? It seems that the question about oil resource, national interest, and that Russia, China, in that Eastern Front is having an alliance. And who they got symbolically that is representing an old white man and three black people. It don't sound like Oz to me. I think in Oz they had the guy that was behind the curtain, right? Little short white man. And then you had the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion.
And white and the white girl, Dorothy.
That's all we need now. Right? I'll leave it there.
Yeah, well, that image is, and see, he's a master at technology. Showing that image of Bilkin there with those three, Austin, Greenfield, and Harris. That, and then say we're in lockstep with what's going on. They don't speak for me.
Mm-hmm.
Their ideals don't speak for me.
Following the yellow brick road.
And speaking of that type of mindset, Richard, let me read this article here, just a paragraph or two. Former Attorney General Loretta Lynch to defend NFL and Brian Flores' lawsuit. The NFL has hired former U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch to defend it and its teams in Brian Flores' racial discrimination lawsuit. Lynch, the Attorney General, and the latter part of the Obama administration will work with, it mentions a few other people that NFL attorneys. Flores, who is black, was fired as Miami's coach last month despite back-to-back winning seasons. He's named the league and three teams, the Dolphins, Broncos, and New York Giants, in a class action suit earlier this month alleging unfair hiring practices and racism against African-American coaches. After the lawsuit was filed, the league said it would defend itself against claims and called the claims without merit and baseless. Soon after the memo, the commissioner, Roger Goodell, said, "We understand the concerns expressed by the coach and others. While the league process moves forward, we will not wait to reassess and modify our strategies to ensure that we are consistent with our values and longstanding commitment to diversity and equity." Now, that was a couple of days after that. They issued a statement in the beginning saying that his claims was baseless and without merit. And then they had their big show the past weekend and had hip-hop artists out there dancing around. The commissioner sitting up in the box with black stars around him. I think I saw Russell Wilson and maybe a few others. All these images, Richard. Mm-hmm. And the issue of the black attorney general representing the NFL in a racial discrimination suit put in by this man in behalf of not only him, all these coaches that have been discriminated against over the years. Some of them afraid to say anything. Some of them saying that it don't exist. A few of them, I read some of their comments the other week. But, I mean, give me your, you know, because this is a historic thing that's been going on, and especially since the 1900 and now, that have been going on among our people. Talk about it from your perspective, Richard.
What it raises is, and I've been, you know, been in discussions, been thinking about this. And I don't really know how to characterize it. You know, I'm always, and I think we always should center our analysis in our own history, right? The three images we see are now at the highest level of the government. I'll raise this as a question. Would they be considered as E. Franklin Frazier, the sociologist of the 1940s who wrote Black Bourgeoisie, would they be considered a part of the Black Bourgeoisie? And the question to this point that you raised, right, do they represent the rest of us? Now, some could say, do they represent themselves as a part of a class unto themselves, or do they represent, even in the sense of those who have government service, like the three, do they represent the government? I mean, America. You know, are they a representation of the highest achievement of Black success in the American paradigm? But then this question still, do they represent our value? Is that what, and I think, and I would agree with you, I don't see anything in the Ukraine geopolitical alignment that deals with our interests as far as Black America. And should we equate everything from us, from our political interests? I would say yes. And should the Black bourgeoisie, if there is, as Franklin said, the Black bourgeoisie, should it be a representation of our interests? Because you don't hear any dissent from what Biden or the State Department or the geopolitical position. You don't hear any anybody in opposition, any black representation in at that level having any opposition. But I'm trying to get to this black bourgeoisie. Do they represent? Where are they in relationship to the interests? Now, we've already had at another level in the government, we hear, we've already had questions about Claiborne, that's his name?
Claiborne.
Claiborne, bringing Biden into, there is analysis saying if it wasn't for Claiborne, Biden wouldn't be president. And therefore, if it wasn't for black folks, who symbolically Claiborne represent, Biden wouldn't be president. I don't know if everybody would agree with that. But here again, this is the positioning of the black bourgeoisie. Article I just seen with Jay-Z, when you talk about the Loretta Lynch and the whole thing of supporting the NFL. Well, Jay-Z seems to be also in support of the NFL. Now, that's a different era, right? That's not like Greenfield, what's his name? The general
Austin.
Austin or the vice president. That's the entertainment realm, right? And I believe that Loretta Lynch was a part of, she was the attorney general for Obama.
Yeah.
Right? But she's supporting the NFL and the new black bourgeoisie, right? The entertainers. Because when it was the football player, they came out with a political stand, right? That's where Jay-Z gets his positioning with the NFL, right? And the whole thing of Kaepernick, right? Around the flag. I mean, right? So he becomes a political representative, and he's also supporting the NFL. So when you ask me, I'm trying to find origin of this, which makes me wonder.
Well, when you mentioned about Jay-Z and some of these entertainers, they're getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
To them, they don't necessarily. Now, they're black, and mm-hmm. certain issues come up, when it's right in your face, they'll act like they're down on certain things. But when it comes to the dollar bill, that's what they're interested in. I mean, they gave him carte blanche to set up entertainment for the NFL. You see all these commercials when they're on, when those games are on, and a lot of commercials might have hip-hop records playing in the background, hip-hop artists dancing around. They had them at the Super Bowl. They're getting paid. They're not doing that free of charge. Loretta Lynch is getting paid. But,
right.
But where's the ethics?
And that's
see, when you don't know who you are and the origin of righteous thinking, if you don't know your culture and the origins of your people and what they have done, then you don't have any ethics because you don't know what they are. Or you choose to adopt somebody else's ethics and moral values. Richard, the ethos or mantra of Europeans. Now, I want you to tell me. I'll just get you to kind of follow your lead on this. And I'll just name three that I can think up off the bat. Survival of the fittest. Self-preservation, the first law of nature. And look out for number one. These are three staunch values of Europeans. They don't come from any African-centered moral values. Look out for number one. Self-preservation is the first law of nature. Whose first law of nature? Where does that even come from? Survival of the fittest. Well, I mean, that's how Europeans felt when they left, when they started venturing off the European soil. And they went about venturing and meeting other people for the first time. And the mindset they had towards meeting other people was different than the mindset the people had when meeting them. So it goes back to ethics and moral values. If you don't have any, if you don't know who you are, or even proud of who you are, not as being a slave that was forced in this country and might have been born here. Our people weren't slaves. We only been here in this place since 1619. Our people have existed on this planet for thousands of years. So you're talking about the period of 16 to 19 to now is like a blip on a radar screen. So I'm just talking about the. If you have adopted these values, then you don't you're working against the interests of your people. Period. Because most of our people don't fall into those brackets. And I think some of our people enjoy having those the terms that you mentioned.
But you know, it's interesting. That's why I started with E. Franklin Frazier and the black bourgeoisie, which I think people should look at to see if it's relevant to the point that you're making. One outline I'll take out of The Wings of Ethiopia: Studies in African American Life and Letters, where he says, "In the black bourgeoisie was a diatribe on the inconsistency inherent in black bourgeoisie separatism." Now, Frazier is making the case that this black bourgeoisie wants black institutions, right? Frazier reveals that the black middle class insisted on institutional separatism in every area of life. He argued, however, that the apparent racial pride that was represented by the maintenance of separate institutions in education, and educational life, business and political life, and religious and family life was contradicted by the fact that all black institutions seemed to be mindlessly imitative of white institutions. Last two lines in a different paragraph. He recognized, however, that although the black bourgeoisie swallowed themselves in the protective fabric of racial institutions, their separate lives reflected their assimilation of American middle-class values, including conspicuous consumption and political conservatism. I think that speaks to what you're saying, right? There's an inconsistency here in relationship to if they're representing black interests. You can't be representing black interests and at the same time reflecting America middle class values, because those are reflected in the three that you enunciated, right? And what was that? What were they again? Survival of the fittest, was that one of them?
Yeah. Self-preservation, the first law of nature, and look out for number one.
So if they're doing that. If they're doing that, could they be looking out for the black masses that at one point going to another of, you know, staying centered in black thought in relationship to try to understand this dichotomy of whether these individuals, because Otis brought up, these are three female, black female judges that by the virtue of their decision, and we have to, I mean, the cases was 500 and, you know, they had large numbers unto themselves and the amount of, they were just holding, and the wealth generation of $1 billion was being created, but it was three black female individuals. And we say, even if it was half of them, because it wasn't that they were convicted of anything, right? But they're making this decision on black lives, black, and they're in, and they would be considered, I guess, a part of that black bourgeoisie. But we also go into this contradiction of Jay-Z and those who are now over in in this European country at this point now as representatives of America, and Loretta Lynch, you know, he's saying that in 1948, Du Bois reflected and amended his original idea about the talented temp in a speech before the Boule. That would be considered arguably the most elite black organization in the country at the time. He was more or not less insistent on the importance of the talented temp. He wrote, willingness to work and make personal sacrifice for solving those problems. Lynching, disenfranchisement, segregation was the course of the first prerequisite and sine qua non, he added. I did not stress this in 1903. I assumed it. He encouraged the expansion of fraternity. What did he assume? He assumed, and I think this is the point that you're making, right? He assumed that those who would be in that position would be speaking in their
behalf of the people.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. That's what he would assume. Right. And what he, this is 1948. What he, in his reassessing his thinking of the talented temp, he said he saw it, and this is a commentary. He saw it, honest and self-sacrificing men, describing it as a question of character. And that goes to the point of your values, right? That mm-hmm. they out of their values, and about which he admitted, I failed to emphasize in my first proposal of the talented temp, quote, further challenging the charge of elitism. Du Bois made it clear that he was not counting on the Boule members to fulfill the mandates of his talented temp. He announced, quote, what the guiding ideal of the Sigma Pi Phi was, I have never been able to learn. I think that that's what we're asking now. What is this? What is their guiding ideal? Is it to serve the people or to serve themselves? Right? I believe it was rooted in a certain exclusiveness and snobbery for which we have all are yearning, even if unconfessed. He accused them of manifesting an unconscious and dangerous dichotomy. Well, that's the same thing, you know, which is interesting because this is what Frazier is saying is after. Frazier does Black Bourgeoisie in 1955. Du Bois is making this statement in 1948. An unconscious and dangerous dichotomy of possessing an identity with the poor, while acting and sympathizing with the rich.
Yeah, see? You see that? So this is not a new phenomenon.
Right.
But it's something that we're going to have to deal with. We can't ignore it. Because with the advent of media now, and I ain't talking about social media, I'm talking about media, and these media conglomerates, whether they're Jewish-owned or other Anglos, they're going to make sure that these people stay in front of you because they serve a purpose.
Mm.
When you look at me, that's who you see. You see the people that we're talking about. They serve a purpose.
Yep.
They don't serve a purpose of any independent thinking, any sovereign thinking. They serve a purpose of, I'm not going to use the term integration because there is no integration. When you integrate something into something, they all become equal parts. It's all together.
Right.
There is no integration. That was some black people's thinking at a time that they can integrate. White folks want assimilation, period. You do what I tell you. You say what I want you to say. You don't think independently. If I want you to say something, I'll give it to you. Then you can express it to the people. Now, Richard, you just read. Let me kind of piggyback on what you talked about. What Du Bois stated in 48 in reference to the what it considered the intelligentsia or black bourgeois.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's different at that time because what he considered the black intelligentsia or bourgeois at that time was college professors, doctors,
mm-hmm.
Maybe educators, even teachers, professionals.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have the politician at that time. The people, cabinet posts and all that didn't exist during those periods.
Not in large numbers.
Anyway. Yeah, but the mindset, that's what he was talking about, the mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and keep in mind, and see, that's why sometimes to reflect on Du Bois' life, he lived a long time. He was almost 100. So he's seen a lot of things come and go in his life, almost went full circle. Now, this is what he said in 1934. At that time, he was 66. He had quit the NAACP, an organization that he had founded, basically. Because it was basically an outreach of the Niagara Movement and the other movement. Was it the Negro League, Richard?
Yeah, the Niagara Movement, yeah.
Yeah, but what was that other movement prior to the Niagara?
The National Negro League.
Yeah. Well,
which was Trotter, primarily Trotter.
Okay. So then it evolved, and some of them quit because it was white involvement in the NAACP.
Right, they split, right.
Now, this is what he said when he quit the NAACP. Now, I'm going to read this little forward. Then I'm going to read paragraphs of some of the things that he said. I want the listening audience to listen clearly to what our ancestors said back then. This is in 2014. This is 1934. This is W.E.B. Du Bois, a founding member of the NAACP Association for the Advancement of Colored People, through most of his life was a staunch integrationist. In 1934, however, he advanced an argument that since integration would not happen in this nation, African Americans had to take steps to develop their own economic and political resources independent of white help and support. Du Bois gave this speech on June 26, 1934, in New York City as he resigned from the NAACP. Now, this is what he stated in this. Now, he mentioned before in other books about how whites thought about what he was doing and that organization. Keep in mind, when he started it, he thought that they would be an asset to him.
Mm.
And the talented 10th would, through their understanding, help raise the masses of the people. Right, Richard? Now, let me read a little bit of this, a couple of paragraphs here. He says, no more critical situation have ever faced the Negroes of America than that of today. Not in 1830, not in 1861, nor in 1867. More than ever, the appeal of the Negro for elementary justice falls on deaf ears. 3/4 of us are disenfranchised. Yet no writer on democratic reform, no third-party movements, no political system says anything about helping Negroes. Long before the Depression, Negroes in the South were losing Negro jobs, those assigned them by common custom, poorly paid, and largely undesirable toil, but nevertheless life-supporting. World War I and its wild aftermath seemed for a moment to open a new door. 2 million black workers rushed north to work in steel and iron, make automobiles and pack meat, build houses, and do the heavy toil in factories. They met first the closed trade unions, which excluded them from the best paid jobs and pushed them into the low wage gutter, denied them homes, and then hit the Depression. Since 1929, Negro workers and white workers have lost jobs. Negroes have had mortgage foreclosed on their farms and homes, has used up their small savings. But in the case of the Negro, everything has been worse and larger. The loss have been greater and more permanent. Colored people of America are coming face to face. The colored people of America have to face the facts quite calmly that most white Americans do not like them and are planning neither for their survival nor for their definite future if it involves free, assertive, modern manhood. Now, you heard that, right, Richard?
I heard it.
Okay. Now I'm going to repeat that last paragraph again. This is in 34 after he quit the NAACP. The colored people of America are coming face to face with the facts that most white Americans do not like them and are planning neither for their survival nor for their definite future if it involves free, assertive, modern manhood. For many years, it was a theory among most Negro leaders that this attitude was the insensibility of ignorance and inexperience, that white America did not know or realize the continuing plight of the Negro. Accordingly, for the last 2 decades, we have striven by book, by periodical, by speech, by appeal, by various dramatic methods of agitation to put the essential facts before white America. Today there can be no doubt that Americans know the facts, and yet they remain, for the most part, indifferent and unmoved.
Then as well.
Now you hear what he's saying. Mm-hmm. He said among somebody, the quote-unquote talented 10th, that they thought that white folks just didn't understand what blacks was going through. That's basically what he's saying, Richard. Mm-hmm. So he said for the past 2 decades when he was in that organization, before he quit in 34, he said he spent all of that time for the last 2 decades, and I'll repeat what he said. We have striven by book, by periodical, by speech, by appeal, by various dramatic methods of agitation to put the essential facts before white people. Today there can be no doubt that Americans know the facts, and yet they remain, for the most part, indifferent and unmoved. Now, I'll just read a couple more paragraphs. He says, Negroes can develop in the United States an economic nation within a nation, able to work through intercooperation to found and fund its own institutions, to educate its genius, and at the same time cooperate with the mass of the nation. Any movement towards such a program is today hindered by the absurd Negro philosophy of scatter, suppress, wait, and escape. There are even many of our educated young leaders who think that because the Negro problem is not in evidence, where there are few or no Negroes, this indicates a way out. They think the problem of race can be settled by ignoring it and suppressing all reference to it. They think that we only have to wait in silence for white people to settle the problem for us. And finally, and predominantly, they think that the problem of 12 million Negroes, mostly poor and workers, is going to be settled by having their more educated and wealthy classes gradually and continually escape from their race into the mass of America, leaving the rest to sink, suffer, and die. Proponents of this program claim, with much reason, that the plight of the masses is not the fault of the emerging upper class. For slavery and exploitation that reduced Negroes to their present level, or at any rate hindered them from rising, the white world is to blame. If the leading Negro classes cannot assume and bear the uplift of their own proletariat, they are doomed for a time. It is not a case of ethics. It is a plain case of necessity. So, Richard, he was imploring our people then, because he's seen what was going on in the organization that he was involved in, not to ignore the masses of their people, not to be quote-unquote selfish and try to blend yourself into a white world, not to adopt those values. Yeah, I mean, you've seen him talking about working together. That's the only way we're going to get out of this.
Right.
But we kind of see what has happened.
And it kind of goes back to when we always going back to is that Sherman asking those black leaders, what do they think?
Or what do they want? Mm-hmm.
And when he asked state in what manner you would rather live, rather scattered among the whites or in a colony by yourself. And they respond. Now, this is what, 1864, 66, 65, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they answer, I would prefer to live by ourselves. For there is a prejudice against us in the South that will take years to get over. I mean, that's the elder. That's 1866. And you're reading 1934. And then he makes speaks to the Boulé saying, I don't even know what y'all about. In 48. But y'all got conflicted interests.
Wow.
I mean, you see, and what's so important about this that's being raised is because, you know, and I hate to use a commercial, but this what she was giving us as a political scientist, a doctoral political scientist, a ex-congressperson from a state who had experience when she told us to use the example of Roots, right? Because the question is not about them. In the end, it's going to be about us. Because we see from the beginning what was the prescription by those who we deem the thinkers of the time, the leaders of different times, right? What is going on? What is it we want to do? All those things being true. And when I say we, and that might include, if not all, or just some of those in the Time for Awakening audience, but it's enough of the others of us who are sitting on the sidelines. Because those who are in, where are they at now, Croatia, whatever, those who are supporting the NFL and doing all this other stuff, the proportion that Du Bois raised, what he said, 3/4? I would say that number, that proportion exists today.
Certainly. In fact, I think it's a greater portion. I think Du Bois was being generous when he said 3/4. When he said 3/4 of our people are disenfranchised. Yet no democratic reforms, no party movements say any word about helping Negroes.
And though we're pushing the beacon of reparations, of repair, in an environment just not too long ago, where a certain segment is being showing that they consider even the action of the voting is illegal, and we see in certain states now the amount of laws that are being put in place to discount voting, our vote, as it was during Reconstruction. This is no, I don't think we're making no off the wall commentary or observation or analysis. I think this is a systemic reality that requires us to consider what is the solution and act on it. Not just consider it, but act on it. I don't know if you would agree, Elliot, and I don't know if the Time for Waking the audience agree. That's my reaction, though, based off of what we are presenting tonight.
Yeah, well, and another question is, if people support what they're doing, if any of the listeners support what Lynch or any of these people are doing, these entertainers that's making money, the ones dealing with the NFL or some of these other races, organizations or individuals, if they support what they're doing, then what is their vision for black folks? I ain't talking about their personal vision or for their family if they have one. Because some of them married other people, you know, married white women. They made money off making records about, you know, blacks and this, that, and the other, but they run out and chase these white girls. But what is their vision for their people? You could see that when, and I'll use Jay-Z for an example, when he wanted to, and it was kind of a mutual attraction, so to speak. Because the NFL wanted to change their image, and what better way to do it is get somebody a little bit younger. And he's not all that young,
right?
But he can attract a younger because he owns record companies and he produces other artists, so he can attract even a younger group. So what better way is to get him involved? And once they propose that idea to him, where he could make millions of dollars, then all of a sudden he made a statement about, well, that Kaepernick stuff is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Although our people are still getting slain out here by police, it has never stopped. But in his estimation, it was dead. It was dead because he achieved what he wanted. He wanted to get involved and handle entertainment for that racist league, and he did. Mm. A personal goal. Self-preservation. Looking out for the fittest. A survival of looking out for number one.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of funny, and we're going to take a brief break, and we got a couple callers on the line. You know, it's funny, Richard, that you mentioned, and, you know, it's just, you know, this is considered Black History Month. Although, I mean, with this program, it's Black History 365. But Carter G. Woodson, who wrote Miseducation of the Negro, The History of the Black Church, and other books.
Mm-hmm.
He made critical statements almost the same way as W.B. Du Bois about people of his ilk at the time. He was considered of the black intelligentsia. Mm-hmm. He didn't think like them. He made critical statements about some of the men that was in that class, so to speak, about the direction they were going in. Because he didn't like it.
I agree.
But they've been there for a while. You know, that meeting that the general had with some of our ancestors, those men, because they met in Atlanta or something, they met in Georgia.
Georgia, right.
And those men was involved in the fighting. A lot of them had been on plantation. They were slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, check out, and I'll read this, then we'll take a brief break and come back and get to callers. Because that mindset is what I'm talking about. The mindset. Check out what Lincoln said. In August 14th, 1862, to an audience, the first audience of what they considered colored men that was ever at the White House, because he was throwing out an idea to them about getting out of here.
Mm-hmm.
White folks never wanted black people to be in society free. I don't know what was going on in their minds. Maybe they thought, well, we'll work these people, and after maybe 100 years or so, they'll start dying and we won't have to worry about them. It was some type of immature thinking that they had in reference to our ancestors being here. Because you had them here toiling and building this country, but you never thought that they'd populate and become just as many people as you were, to the point where you had to import other whites in this country to have a so-called balance of power. I don't know what they were thinking, and I don't care what they were thinking, to be honest. But let me read to you his statements to them. And these people were considered at that time, Richard, 1862, to be a quote-unquote black upper class, if you could even say that. Let me read the statement he made to them. August 14th, 1862, President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, gave audience to a committee of colored men at the White House. This was a statement he made. Should the people of your race be colonized? And where? Why should they leave this country? This is perhaps the first question for proper consideration. You and we are different races. We have between us a broader difference than exists between almost any two other races of people. Whether it's right or wrong, I need not discuss it. But this physical difference is a great disadvantage, as I think your race have suffered greatly, many of them by living among us, while ours suffered from your presence. In a word, we suffer on both sides. If this is admitted, it affords a reason at least why we should be separated. You here are free, I suppose. And our ancestors said with one voice, yes, sir. Perhaps, and this is Lincoln again talking, perhaps you have long been free for all your lives. Your race are suffering, in my judgment, a great wrong inflicted on any people. But even when you cease to be slaves, you are yet far removed from being placed in any equity with the white race. You are cut off from many of the advantages which other races enjoy. The aspirations of men is to enjoy equality with the best when free. But on this broad continent, not a single one of your race is equal to a single one of mine.
Mm.
Go where you are treated best, and the ban is still upon you. I do not propose to discuss this, but to present it as a fact with which we all have to deal with. I cannot alter it, even if I would. It's a fact which we all think and feel alike, I and you. We look at our condition owing to the existence of two races on this continent. I need not recount to you the effects upon white men growing out of the institution of slavery. I believe it is general evil on the white race, of your present condition. The country is engaged in war. Our white men are cutting each other's throats, none knowing how far it will extend. And then consider what we know to be truth. But your race among us, there could not be a war. There would not be a, but for, excuse me, let me say that again, Richard. White men are cutting one another's throats, none knowing how far this will extend. And then consider this truth. But for your race among us, there would not be any war. Although many men engaged on either side do not care about you one way or the other, nevertheless, I repeat, without the institution of slavery and this colored race, the war would not exist.
Mm.
It is better for us both, therefore, to be separated. I know that there are free men among you, even if it could be better, even if they could better their condition, are not as much inclined to go out of the country as those who are slaves and could obtain their freedom on this condition. I suppose one of the principal difficulties in the way of colonization is that free colored men cannot see that his comfort would be infringed upon. You may believe you can live in Washington or elsewhere in the United States the remainder of your life, perhaps. So more of you can in a foreign country would be better off. And hence you may come to the conclusion that you have nothing to do with the ideal of going to a foreign country. This is an extremely selfish view in this case. But you ought to do something to help those who are not as fortunate as you are. There is an unwillingness on the part of my people, harsh as it may be, for you colored men to remain free among us. Now, if you could give a start, if you could give a start to white people, you would open the door for many to be made free. If we deal with those who are not free at the beginning, and whose intellects are clouded by slavery, we have poor materials to start with. If intelligent colored men such as yourself go before them, we might accomplish much. It is exceedingly important that we have men to be, at the beginning, capable of thinking as white men and not those who are systematically oppressed. So, Richard, he was basically telling them, well, and if you just make it in conclusion, that you can't live here in this society free. We don't want you here. You don't want to be here. This one he was proposing sending them to Central America.
Right.
And he was saying it's important that we send you men down there first because you have an intellect and you think like white people. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't hide it. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And he said you could go down there and colonize. That's what they wanted. I mean, we live here now as an internal colony. Black folks don't want to admit it. But he wanted to send our ancestors out of the country at that time. But the situation changed. Now, he didn't invite Douglas to that meeting because Douglas didn't know, he wasn't interested in that, and he didn't even want to discuss that.
Right.
Things changed after they started getting their butts kicked in several battles. Then they wanted blacks. They had to sign the Emancipation Proclamation and get blacks in that Union Army. But other than that, they didn't want blacks here. And that was a discussion that not only Lincoln had, Washington had it before him, Jefferson had it, they all had it.
Mm.
But the useful tool as far as they was concerned was people that, according to this Lincoln, people among you that think like white people. That's what he said.
And you know, I have to add this before you go to the break, Elliot. And it's another thing that. But the point: what was the reason why Lincoln came to that conclusion, and white folks come to that conclusion? And I think by that time, the bill hadn't already come into the changing of the Constitution hadn't occurred. The 13th and 14th and 15th Amendment hadn't occurred yet, right?
No, no, not at that time, no.
It was the anticipation. Because in those states where the numerical number of black folks would be greater than the numerical number of white folks, and the fear of the participation of black folks engaging in the electoral process would be an avenue. One, they needed two, right? They needed economics. And that was what was supposed to be considered when Sherman came back, right, in 66 to those ministers, like the whole question about land and the vote, right? Mm-hmm. So that was the fear. Where they couldn't live together, because in those areas, one was, we're not going to give up the area so you could be in sovereign governance to yourselves in this political arrangement, political economic, especially since you already have the labor force to know how to work that commodity crop that was in the billions. Export cotton was creating billions of dollars, and the South lost. Just imagine that being turned over to black folks. So all those little sheriffs, clerk, county clerk, all those little political positions, they would be in their hands, and it showed out because white folks printed that there was a fear of Negro domination.
Yeah.
Lincoln said, we can't see
And you don't, and you don't want that either, because then if you do, what you would have to do is go to war to protect it. We'll call it defense. Because if white folks leave and just leave you with all of that economic asset that we kept, and you gonna stay in the union, you think they're gonna leave you alone? If you stay, you think they're gonna stay and let you dominate them economically and politically?
I think that's what he mentioned to them, Richard, in that that thing I read.
That's what I'm saying.
I just put it down. He said, it don't matter if you're free or not, wherever you go. What did he say that at? Go ahead, finish your thought. I'll find that paragraph.
So when we dig into what he understood they were doing a systems analysis. He was doing a systems analysis. That it was the best case scenario is for y'all to go. And we'll say, since y'all think like us, since you think like us, you would know how to use that land to trade with England. You would know how to use that land to organize your people so that you can be able to harness that cotton crop. You would know how. You think like us. You would know how to organize your people to be able to use the political ballot and come to the Congress and get the federal resources and control the states in order to assist your economic and political positioning. You would, because that's you would be doing the same thing we're doing. And you would have the state armory at your disposal. And you showing me you know how to shoot. We can't live together, because we'll be in war. Let us not be fooled about what he was saying.
Yeah, he was doing something in white folks' best interest, and he was trying to convince them it was in their best interest.
There you go. There you go.
Now, this is that paragraph. He said, I suppose one of the principal difficulties in the way of colonization is that free colored men such as yourself cannot see that his comfort would be infringed upon. You may believe you can live in Washington or elsewhere in the United States the remainder of your life, perhaps, but you ought to do something to help those who are not so fortunate as yourself. The unwillingness on the part of our people, harsh as it may be, for you free colored men to remain with us. Now, I give you so he was letting them know that you might think that you've got, no, but it's not going to work. He's basically telling them it's not going to work.
Right.
And it hasn't worked.
And he's flipping that because that's a sleight of hand. Because Negroes is already showing if you give them the weaponry and the food, they'll fight.
They can do it. Mm-hmm.
And them southern boys, they will fight them to the point where they consider, why should we be fighting these Negroes? Because that's what the northern boys were saying. Why northern white boys came to the conclusion, why are we going down there being killed in the name of the Confederacy by these Negroes? At first, they was all hyped up and they was going. But when they started letting the Negroes in and giving them guns, and even though they were losing, they were seeing how they were winning those battles, the tenacity that they were given. You know, so he's saying that to them, like, yeah, like, you know, you ain't going, where you going? He's separating. You know, yes, you free, but what about all these other Negroes that they, you know, they ain't like you. So where you gonna live? Because if you stay, then you have to be with them, and you ain't gonna live like them. What, we gonna let you? They gonna let you just walk around like you all this, that, and the other? No. Wouldn't you want to go someplace where you can't walk around? This, that? And since you think like us, go to Panama, see if you could do that. And we'll hire you as workers because we got a company that's willing to send the rest. When you send the rest of them, you can be the overseer for them.
Wow.
This is a sham. And when they, after they got the 14th Amendment, I mean, he got killed by the time of the 14th Amendment. When they had the right to vote, they already confiscated their land temporarily. The white elite, the productive whites, what they didn't, what they had to negotiate, are they going to give them the right to vote? Citizenship. Now, if we give them citizenship, then they vote, and they got these numbers, then we got to give them land. And didn't they come up with the scheme for the 40 acres?
Yep.
And then they had to renege on that. Because that was based off of taking the land from those white landowners who they didn't want to take it from. They wanted to keep them the same. How many appeasements they done made to them? Look, just don't fight, y'all. We can work something out. It was them white boys saying, "Look, we been listening to y'all long enough. We can beat y'all on the battlefield." And they probably missed. The only miscalculation is they probably thought that these Negroes was going to stay on their side. Because they were the ones that were feeding the line. Who was growing the food? Poor whites wasn't growing the food. They weren't planters. When you have an army, you got to feed them. So, we have to think. And this ain't over. And I know you have to go to break, but I just want to make the reference that if anybody look into the Brennan Center for Justice, and it got a voting laws roundup from February 2022, and you look at what these states are doing to restrict the vote, and look at what states are doing it.
I think they've already tossed out a bunch of votes in Texas already, based on that that new law that was passed. Well, they said something about they were going to send them back because the people sent the mail-in ballots, but their ID numbers wasn't on there. So they said hopefully they can get back to them and they can correct them and have them in time for this election that's going on down there. So, yeah, you know how that's going to work.
Restrictive legislation. As of January 14th, legislators in at least 27 states have introduced pre-filed or carry over 250 restrictive bills this year. Of these, at least 96 bills in 12 states have been pre-filed or introduced for the 2022 legislative session. I mean, it goes on and on. And it breaks it down, where this is happening, what types of bills have been. This is in this deep. Is this a reaction to some immigration? When they did that January 6th, when they said who was the ones they were saying are the ones, the votes that they said were false votes? It wasn't the immigrants. It was Negro votes. And they stormed the Capitol. And they still ain't figuring out what they're going to do with these fools. Yeah, we got something to think about, I think. I don't know, Ellie. I don't know if people are hearing us.
We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, there's a couple callers sitting on the line. We'll get right to them. You can get involved in the conversation. Time we have left by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. Be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. IBBToMe.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Commit You Black family, to join your interconnected Commit You Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
In this crooked game of power politics here in America, the Negro, namely the race problem, integration, civil rights issue, are all nothing but tools used by the whites who call themselves liberals against another group of whites who call themselves conservatives, either to get into power or to retain power. Among whites here in America, the political teams are no longer divided into Democrats and Republicans. The whites who are now struggling for control of the American political throne are divided into liberal and conservative camps. The white liberals from both parties cross party lines to work together toward the same goal. And white conservatives from both parties do likewise. The white liberal differs from the white conservative only in one way. The liberal is more deceitful, more hypocritical than the conservative. Both want power, but the white liberal is the one who has perfected the art of posing as the Negro's friend and benefactor. And by winning the friendship and support of the Negro, the white liberal is able to use the Negro as a pawn or a weapon in this political football game that is constantly raging between the white liberals and the white conservatives. The American Negro is nothing but a political football.
Since the 60s, you will see nothing but betrayals by the petty bourgeois elements in our society. The African bourgeoisie is the most corrupt bourgeoisie in the world. In Africa, they seek luxury in the midst of mass suffering. There are more Mercedes in Africa than in any other continent in the world. In America, as soon as they arrive at a position based on this blood of the people, they snatch that position and run away from the people. But you must not think that they represent the people. They only represent their opportunistic self using the people every step of the way. So you must not be confused. The petty bourgeoisie everywhere will be running for cover, but the masses will spare them not. Consequently, we who have dedicated our lives to the people's struggle, we who knowing that the people will always be free, we understanding that we must make a contribution to qualify our struggle since the 60s, have been dedicating all our energies to only one task, the organization of the masses of our people. We are not running for mayor. We're not running for president. No changes can come from the top down. We're not stupid. Changes can only come from the bottom up. The masses and the masses alone can make them. If you want to learn something from the 60s, the lesson is simple. Organize the masses of the people. Thank you.
Who put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump. A political chump. The party that you back controls two-thirds of the House of Representatives and the Senate, and still they can't keep their promise to you, because you're a chump. Anytime you throw your weight behind a political party that controls two-thirds of the government, and that party can't keep the promise that it made to you during election time, and you are dumb enough to walk around continuing to identify yourself with that party, you're not only a chump, but you're a traitor to your race.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:51 here in the city of Philadelphia on this Freestyle Friday. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call, 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go to the phone, 718. Are you there?
Yeah, what's going on, brother? This is Brother Maurice.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. You brothers did such an excellent job, man. I was loving it. I was sitting here the whole time listening and loving every minute of it. Just to quickly, you know, surmise some things, you know, the officer was Kim Porter. The judge was Regina Chu. It was the black officer was Muhammad Noor. And his sentence got reduced from 12 and a half years down to 5 years after they threw out the third-degree murder charge against him.
Okay.
So he's already, at the time he did that in October, he already had served 29 months. So he has a couple more years to go. You know, I was thinking about when we were talking about Loretta Lynch, and I think the last time I ever heard her do anything as Attorney General was her last speech. She made it from the 16th Street Baptist Church, and I was like, you know, talking about Dr. King, his legacy, and commemorating him. And then you listen to these black people standing up for the NFL. And it made me think for a second about Jim Brown. And why am I bringing that up? Well, remember when Muhammad Ali said he wasn't going to Vietnam?
Mm-hmm.
Jim Brown had what they called that Cleveland Summit back then. I think it was 1967 he did that. And then you had all of these black athletes came around him and supported him. And I said to myself, why isn't it the same for Brian Flores when he's attacking the NFL. Where's all these black athletes and people coming around and supporting him?
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear more people from the NBA talking about Brian Flores than I do in the NFL. You know, what did they say? What the brother wrote that book? He said the $40 million slaves?
Yep. Bill Roden.
Yeah.
What do you think? Brother Maurice?
They're capitalists, brother. Richard is thinking too deeply. These people are capitalists.
Oh, man.
You giving them too much credit. They ain't thought about this stuff. They capitalists. It's about money. Money in their pocket. You played a couple of Malcolm X clips. Remember the one that he said? You don't see no white singer or dancer or trumpet player as a leader, right? You don't see none of those people as a leader. And he said, when you see them in the black community, that's because somebody put them there to say exactly what they want them to say. So when I look at Jay-Z and all of them, it doesn't surprise me. They're doing what their job is. They're capitalists. And capitalism comes before being black for a whole bunch of people. Jay-Z got credit because he did that piece on Khalid Browder about, you know, him killing himself and being in jail and bail and all that other stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people were like, oh, maybe he's different and stuff. But you ask Damon Dash if he's different. Ask him that question. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised. And in the other point you were making, the speech that you, the stuff that you were reading from, I think that goes back to 1862
mm-hmm.
when Lincoln spoke to them. So that was way before the 13th Amendment and all other stuff of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm not, I was sitting here because me and you spoke early in the week, Ellie, and I was just going over some things that I was talking to some young brothers and sisters, just trying to talk to them, trying to get a deeper understanding of where they're coming from. And, you know, I don't want to pull too far from what y'all was talking about, but I had to send them back. I had to kind of send them back a little bit. Because we started getting into the issue of the N-word and, you know, who should be able to use it, who shouldn't be able to use it, all of this stuff like that. So then I went back and I said, well, you know something, you know, everybody blames Richard Pryor, right, and stuff. I said, I don't hear nobody saying about Harriet Beecher Stowe. I don't see nobody saying nothing about the writer of, who wrote Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. Mm-hmm. What is his name?
Just jumped out of my mind. I can't think of it now.
But even Neil Hurston, right? When her writing, she used the N-word consistently through it. It's not something that it wasn't used by people. It's part of what they call the common vernacular.
Twain.
I'm thinking about some
Brother Otis wrote it. Brother Otis wrote it in the chat room. Twain, Mark Twain.
Yeah, Mark Twain.
Twain. Thank you, brother. Couldn't get his name out. But see, the thing that I thought was powerful, right? And this is Richard Pryor was using the word. And then as part of his therapy, Richard Pryor, to get off of the drugs and all of that, his therapist told him, yo, why don't you go to Africa? So he went to Africa, right? And this is the thing that he said that I thought was so powerful, right? He said when he walked around and he looked around the places, right? He said, after touring Kenya's National Museum going every place, the only people you saw were black at the hotel, on the television, in the stores, on the streets, in the newspapers, at the restaurants, running the government and the advertisement everywhere. And then he said, he turned to his wife and he said, there's no ends here. The people here, they have self-respect and they have pride. And then he talked about, hey, I'm sorry I ever even used the word. So, I mean, you know, Paul Mooney talked about it. He said it, it made his teeth white. It made his pockets fat. You know, and then he started understanding and he started getting deeper into the idea of race. But then I come to understand it not from a Marxist philosophy, because I know a lot of brothers are into that nonsense. And I did call it nonsense, because when they talk about the proletariat, they damn sure are not talking about us. You was never included in his philosophy about that. what I'm listening to these brothers talking about is economics, and they are capitalists, and they do not care color. Capitalism trumps color, trumps race. Don't be surprised by these brothers. I'm not. And so when you look at somebody like Loretta Lynch, how does she reconcile that? Like you made an excellent point, because I said on my show several times, I told them, I said, it's not cognitive dissonance these white people are dealing with. Cognitive dissonance deals with somebody struggling with something. I said it's cognitive indifference. I made up that term. You said it today. Indifference. It's cognitive difference. They've already resolved it in their mind. They don't give a damn.
Yeah.
So I mean, so when I'm talking to these young brothers and sisters and I'm listening to them, and I started explaining to them, I said, well, you know something, there's a cost to being an activist, right? Not this, you know, get online and you put up a couple of pictures and a couple of quotes and you did something and you feel good about yourself. You walked around during the summertime, but you see what happened, right? Because just like you talked about, of black people, anything that's concerning black life in America is on the back burner, or the back seat of the congressional bus. Everything. They just passed the whole, what did he just, I just finished talking about with the sexual harassment and sexual assault act. It just got passed by Congress and the House. They were able to find a compromise on that. They will find a compromise on saving the post office. Still, the two bills dealing with voting rights and reparations and stuff, nowhere to be found. And the other thing that people are forgetting, and I've talked about this continually on my show the last couple of weeks, because I'm looking at what's going on in California, the California Reparations Task Force. You got all of these experts coming forward. Again, to your point, Elliot and Richard, people bring in the science, they bring in information forward, and ain't a damn person listening. Reparations dealing with the highways. Why would that make any sense? Well, they destroyed black communities when they built all these highways and stuff. People had to sell their house where they used eminent domain when they couldn't use the covenants and all the other stuff that they were doing. These are the things that are going, and they destroyed black wealth. Because imagine if you could have kept that house and be able to pass it down. That's generational wealth that's lost. And then I have to sit up here and be told by something. And again, before y'all say anything, I'm going to say this and I'm going to get off. Before y'all say anything, I love black women. I love my sisters. But I cannot sit here and have these women tell me I'm a misogynist. And I said, what power do a black man have over you? You listening to these white women who are struggling against their white men in this power structure. And guess what? When they go to the voting booth, they vote exactly with them. Okay, so brothers, I got to put me back on
Brother Reese, before you leave, let me ask you a question, because Loretta Lynch is from up there in New York. She was a prosecutor up there, if I'm not mistaken. Now, this is just speculation. And to be honest, sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. According to reports, Sharpton had worked with the FBI and governmental organizations in the past. Now, last week, the NFL met with quote unquote black leadership. They met with Sharpton. They met with the head of the NAACP. They met with Marielle. And they met with a couple of women. I think somebody was the head of the Baptist convention or something. Two other people involved, or two other group heads. Now, if they're meeting in behalf of the lawsuit or black people in general, because black people deserve to know what was stated at those meetings, well, nothing was said. But it's kind of odd that he met with Sharpton and the heads of these organizations, and then this week they come out and mention that Loretta Lynch is going to be defending the NFL. Doesn't that seem a little strange to you, Brother Reese?
No. No, not at all. It seems like it's politics and it's business as usual. Don't surprise me as nothing. No, I'm too damn old. I'm too damn old to be surprised anymore.
Okay.
All right. there was a time when I was naive and I believed in certain things in the world that that black people loved each other trumped anything else. No, it don't. When it comes to when they get their hooks into you, then they can get anybody to do anything that they need them to do. And look, I'm not gonna sit here and tell you I don't have a relationship and no Al Sharpton. I've had a good relationship with him in New York. As I've been, doing my show 24 years, and I have to give him some level of respect because I've seen some of the work he's done, and I've interviewed him a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you this, and I'll say this publicly, that this is the first time I'm saying this publicly. I've known several events that have happened in New York where black grassroots brothers and sisters came together, and when they found out that he was going to be a part of the whole thing, everybody just would refuse to be involved. Now, I don't know what that's the honest truth. And so they felt it would be a useless thing, and they felt that somehow it was going to get worked out, and a lot of people wasn't going to have a seat at the table. And see, that's the problem. You start the fight, you spend the blood and the time and the effort into it, and then somebody else comes in and makes a settlement. And then you sitting outside wondering what the hell happened. And that's why I'm hoping that this National Black Political Convention is going to be going on in August is going to be good. Because I love Brother Ntumi. I personally knew him and interviewed him. When he did Open Line in New York City, was one of the top radio show there. I used to go up into the booth and sit with them. And he loved me and treated me like a brother and as a mentor. So I love Brother Ntumi. He's one of the few people that gets a pass on somebody being a celebrity because he was true to black people.
Okay.
Loved him. And I miss him dearly. He was the one, he used to always tell me, he said, Maurice, the engine of any movement is young people. And the problem that I see happening, Elliot, is we got to get back to our young people, that disconnect. You know, one brother said to me, Maurice, you're just not on the internet, excuse me, enough. I'm not on all of these platforms and all that. I said, well, you know something? You know why I'm not? Because I'm busy doing the work. Some people don't want to blow the, I love the work that y'all are doing, and we are grateful for it. But see, this is the thing that I think about, Elliot, and I'm not accusing you, Richard, of this, so let me be clear. I'm wondering what happens when you're not around. I hope y'all live to be 200 years old and be just as brilliant and articulate as both of y'all are. But when you're not around, what happens? When I'm not around, what happens? Because it's like we're standing in the desert crying in the wilderness. Is there anybody listening? Now you can put me back on home.
Hey, thanks for your contribution, brother.
Take care now.
Peace.
Let's go to 215.
Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all brothers doing tonight?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Praise be to Allah. Yeah, Brother Maurice made some good points. And before I talk about any of my subject matter, I want to harken back what Brother Maurice said about Brother Ntumi. You know, I don't know if a lot of people in the audience realize, Brother Ntumi, may Allah be pleased with him and grant him paradise. You know, he was the son of one of my all-time great jazz artists, Jimmy Heath. And see, when they did the bio on Brother Ntumi, he said that he's, from the time he was a child, this brother, I guess music was something natural for him, Brother Alan Richard, and Tom Richard, this audience, because in his house, he said people like John Coltrane, Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, they would be just come by his house, because his family, his father was a great jazz artist, the Heath brothers, Albert, Uncle Albert and Tootie Heath. I mean, so this from a young child, it was almost natural, Elliot, He was like a prodigy because he was exposed to some of these great jazz artists at such a young age, Just what amazing human being. He's definitely going to be missed. I remember Brother Jay had mentioned Brother Ntumi. And just for the beauty, and like Brother Murray said, this brother was unapologetic black. I mean, he made a comment one time. He said, look, I don't mind, having white people buy my music or support my, the music or buy my music or come to my shows. He said, but he made it very clear. He was unapologetic, Ella. He said, look, I'm for my people. He said, I want black folks to be the main proprietors of my music. You know what I mean? He made it clear. I mean, how many, think about it, Ellen Richard. How many black artists you think talk like that? I mean, this brother was so far ahead of his time. That's why I say brothers like him, Sam Cooke, Otis Redding. You know, they're a rare breed of artists, man. That was so for their people, man. It's just amazing, man. You know, so. Brother Toomey would definitely be missed, man. And, let me say this to before I talk about Loretta Lynch, her traitorous hussy self. Before I talk about her, let me say this. I want to clarify something. You know, to my brother in New York, not Brother Maurice, but to my other brother in New York, their cars and stuff, you know, he made a comment. He said that the Zionists or the Jews don't say nothing about black people. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. I'm going to give two quick examples. Right up there in the state of New York where he lives at, I don't know if you ever heard of Bob Grant. Bob Grant is a racist Jewish talk show host, Zionist, who he was so bad that you had black folks from Philadelphia, some of the black activists, Brother Elliot, that you know very well who made transition. They was going to take a bus and meet with Bob Law and people to try to, you know, get this joker removed from there. This is how bad he was. He was dogging black people all the time on his radio show in New York. Bob Grant, you know, you have the here in Philadelphia, you had a Jewish talk show who's deceased now. Irv Homer got on his show twice and called a black woman a bitch. He didn't say black B. He said just what else. He said just what I said. He said the black bitch hit my car. He said it twice. I caught up the ADL and B'nai B'rith and complained about this guy. They typically what these Jews always do when they're their own say something derogatory about we got to look into it. And stuff. Nothing was said. Nothing else was ever done about it. So, and then of course, just recently, you had Shapiro, a Jewish political operative, if you will, said that Joe Biden picked for the Supreme Court fiasco, said he picking a lesser black woman. You know what I mean? Imagine the uproar if a black man said a lesser Jewish woman. What the uproar be from them? Again, no word from the ABL, whatever. So my point, just for long story short, these white Jews have been saying stuff about black. They say it all the time and stuff. So it's stuff about they don't say anything. They always say things. It's the point is that the cowardly Negroes never say anything back when they do these things and stuff. And the ABL, the Jewish Defense League, all these words, they jump out after men. Minister Farrakhan or Deshaun Jackson or Minister Rodney Muhammad or Leonard Jeffries, they don't say a damn thing. So that's why this stuff goes on and on. But I just want to clarify that point. That's not true. These white Jews have I'm a 60-year-old black man. I've listened to talk radio since the early 70s. And these bigoted Jewish talk show hosts, Don Imus, for example, they call those young black girls nappy-headed hoochie mamas or whatever. Remember, Elliot, yeah. 7 years ago. So these people have always said things about our people. There's nothing new about that. I just want to make that point before I move on, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you. I just want to clarify that. All right, secondly, you know, I don't even know where to begin. You know, when you look at person like Loretta Lynch, I mean, you know, yeah, I don't know what you can say about the woman. She's a disgrace. And like I said, I never liked her anyway. Because, like I said, I remember back when she was Obama's attorney general, she got into a thing where she upset black folks. I can't remember the exact, because this happened a while ago, but she made it clear that she was not against the police. You know, that she's pro-cop and all the law and order. And when they come to do it, how them devils do our people, prime example, how they did the brother in Jersey where they came on his scene and just threw the brother down and told the white boy or the white looking boy to go sit on the couch, whatever like that. I mean, so this woman has showed her true colors. That's why I'm not surprised at her actions and stuff like her defending, but like Brother Maurice said, that indifference. That's what they're indifferent. They don't give a damn. See, we got to keep in mind, Ellie, I say this time and time again, like the late great Cecil Moore said here in Philadelphia, you might be my color, but you're not my kind. Some of these Negroes hate black people, man. I mean, we got to be clear, whether it be a Clarence Thomas, a Loretta Lynch, these people don't like black people, man. They might be black as far as pigmentation is concerned, but their mindset is as white and racist as anybody. You got and they not by this stuff. You got a whole bunch of them out there. You got the Cal Swains of the world from Vanderbilt University. They ain't a niggerist. I don't ever know what one is. All she do is dog black people out, man. Doing their defending white racism, brutality against our people. So you got a whole bunch of them niggers and niggerists out there, male and female. So I'm under no illusions about these people, man. These people don't have no love for black people, man. If them niggerists was standing over top of you when you were sitting in an electric chair, and they could pull the switch and send you to see your maker, and you had a Klansman on the other side, your odds of surviving might be even better with the Klansman. I mean, that's how self-hatred these Negroes are, man. They don't got no love for no black people, man. I mean, they go for Loretta Lynch, Cal Swain, Clarence Thomas, and all the ilk and stuff, man. These people don't care nothing about our people, man. And by the same token, I don't give a damn about them either. I don't care nothing about no Loretta Lynch, man. She's a disgrace. Always have been a disgrace and always will be a disgrace. Now, you got to ask yourself, what black woman can fix her lips? I mean, you have to put it in context. What black woman could fix her crooked-ass lips to sit there and say that the NFL is not racist? I mean, how much money, like the old saying in the Bible, who is the man or woman to gain the world but lose their soul? That you can actually fix your lips, knowing the history of that racist-ass NFL, and you're going to sit there and say there's no racism. The charges that this man is saying is baseless and it's not without any kind of merit. What kind of foolishness is that, man? Mm-hmm. You know? But see, again, I'm not surprised. Her, Condoleezza Rice, Susan Rice, again, black women, but they got white racist supremacist minds and stuff, man. I mean, we got to be clear when dealing with these people, Ellen Richard. These people ain't no friends of the black community. That's why I say these last couple of things, and I promise I'd get off. That's why I keep trying to tell them to rest the radio here in Philadelphia. I heard black people keep beating the drum about these nominees that Biden picked for the Supreme Court. And again, I have no problem saying it. As far as intelligence, as far as dealing with the white man's so-called criteria for being a Supreme Court, of course they qualify. They're more qualified than the white devils that have been on their male and female from an academic standpoint. But it's not about the academic intelligence. It's the book smart. You know, I'm talking about what is the black consciousness and stuff. And I keep hearing a lot of black folks talking about that clown down in South Carolina, a Clyburn, who's responsible for Biden getting in there, because like you played the tape, and it's funny, Ellie, you played the tape by Malcolm. You put them first, they put us last. And you see that going right now with Joe Biden. Like Marie Scott said a minute ago, you can't get this devil can't get nothing passed for black people. The George Floyd bill, police bill, the John Lewis voting rights bill, and the other voting bill can't get the damn thing passed. But like Marie said, they'll be able to get a compromise on that other stuff they're talking about. But yet black people put the Democrat Party first, Biden in particular. That's why he's president, because of black people. But yet they put us last. And you got Negroes constantly want to make excuses. Well, he got to deal with the racist Republicans, the Lindsey Grahams, the Mitch McConnells. I don't want to hear that stuff. But look at your own party, man. It's like Malcolm said, you got conservatives and liberals in both parties that play this game on black people. Right in that damn Democrat Party got Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema. They supposed to be Democrats. They fighting. They side along with their white brother on the other side of the aisle. See, the stuff Malcolm was talking about, the games they play on our people, man. You know what I mean? So Clyburn is number the Negro, and he's partial while Biden is in there. But again, Biden giving black folks his behind a kiss, and he will continue to give black people his behind a kiss. And don't you see the twist of irony, Elliot? Now, this woman, Kim Potter, who killed our young brother, Dante Wright, this wench gets 2 years in jail, and it's pretty clear she's going to probably serve less than that with time served and everything like that. Now, here Bill Cosby didn't kill a damn body. Think about it. He didn't kill no damn body. This man served damn near 3 years in prison, Elliot and Richard. You heard me, Elliot?
Yeah.
Damn near 3 years in prison. He didn't kill no damn body, and the devil still want to throw him back in jail, but yet this white wench shoots this brother in cold blood, and she's going to be out of jail in less than a year. And you still got Negroes on terrestrial radio stations telling, oh, Bill Cosby this, Bill Cosby that. Man, shut up with that nonsense, man. I don't know about no damn Bill Cosby when this damn wench can shoot a young brother in cold blood and get less than some damn 2 years in prison. Jason Van Dyke, same way. He got he shot our brother 16 times in Chicago. He got damn near less time than Bill Cosby. Come on with this foolishness, man. We talk so damn stupid sometimes, man. You wonder why stuff keep happening to our people. It's like bad karma. We talk stupid stuff into existence, and that's why the stuff keep happening to our people, man. You understand what you're dealing with. You deal with these people, man. These people are no good, never have been no good, and they never will be any good, man. So, I mean, we just got to be clear on that and stuff, man. But what's going on? I mean, and last point, Brother Ellie, and I promise I'd leave with this comment. Again, you see right here in the state of Pennsylvania, you got all them bigots running for governor and senate. You got the Dr. Oz's of the world. You got the Bill McSwain, the former attorney, U.S. attorney under Trump, a cold-blooded bigot. I mean, these people are making it clear. And all of them talking about that law and order stuff. And when they talking about law and order, they ain't talking about locking up little damn white folks. They talking about locking up your black ass and throwing the key. And then you got McSwain. Now, all these white cops to murder black folks all around the country. Here in Philadelphia, the brother Dante that got killed by the police out there had the mental problems and stuff like that. They shot out in West Philly last year or the year before. And all the other brothers, David Jones, they got shot by the white cop. All this stuff happened. What McSwain says, if I'm elected governor, I'm going to put a bill in. And if anybody takes a law, a police officer's life under my watch as governor, it will die. They will die. I ain't never heard that devil say kill these white cops for killing our people. And when he say die, you know damn well he ain't talking about killing a white man to kill a white cop. You know what I'm saying, Ellie and Richard? He talking about black folks. If you don't think you're talking about black folks, you delude yourself. I mean, my point is clear. These bigots letting you know where they stand. They're about white racism, white supremacy, white brutality, everything, you know, white hegemony, whatever you want to call it. They making it clear what their goals is. We can sit there and keep playing this game. I can say that it's been football, but these people are clear about their maintaining and white supremacy, and that's the same. And like last point on this thing with Ukraine, I heard black folks on the terrestrial radio station talking about Ukraine. Black people have no skin in the game. What the Honorable Elijah Muhammad say? Stay the hell out of white folks. Let them devils fight it out between them. I don't give a damn about the Ukraine and Russia and all that. This stuff, again, it's here black folks catching hell, got our kids going to piss poor schools, drinking lead, water with lead, and they're getting permanent brain damage, and you getting caught up in Joe Biden, these white folks up on some damn Ukraine. And black folks got enough, you got enough damn problems just trying to move our people. For what the hell we should care about some damn Ukraine for and stuff, man? You know, we always deal with stuff that had nothing to do with our people. You know what I'm saying, Elliot?
Now, you mentioned, and I didn't mention that, but now they had a press conference 2 days ago here in Philadelphia. I think it was a pastor, and I think I've seen one of them elected officials out there, if I'm not mistaken, about the 28 schools that have been discovered had lead.
Mm-hmm.
And the children been drinking this water, and they've been drinking it for years. It ain't just lead disappeared in the pipes.
That's
overnight.
Right.
Now,
that's right.
I'll be willing to bet, and I ain't no betting man, I'll be willing to bet some big money that all 28 of them schools is in your communities.
Oh, no question.
Wait a minute. Let me add this.
Sure.
The reason they discovered or so-called brought this to light, because I'll bet you dollars to donuts that in gentrified communities where these white kids are starting to, or white folks are starting to move in, and they got plans for these schools, they then went in there and found out that there's lead in them places.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
And I know your plan is in the littlest in those gentrified communities. That will be taken care of.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. That's why it was even brought to light.
Exactly.
If you look in the neighborhood, now I haven't looked. Richard, have you seen the areas that they're saying these 28 schools are in?
No, I didn't see. I haven't seen that report.
I know what you're talking about. I saw the report, Elliot.
Yeah, I'm going to look up that list and see what these schools are.
In last point, like I said, in closing, we have to understand we got so much stuff that we have on our plate and stuff. We can't get these distractions that white folks throw out there and stuff, man. It's sad to hear black folks getting caught up like you got any skin in the game. All we as black people should be telling Joe Biden and the rest of them devils up on Capitol Hill, damn it, if you start something with Russia, damn it, we don't want you sending out black and brown people over there to die. That's what we want to do. We try to keep these brothers going over. Like Muhammad Ali took the courageous stance back in 1967. That should be our goal, letting Biden know, hands off, we not sending out young brothers and sisters over there to die, and they come right back here to America and get gunned down by some racist white cops like that brother Kenneth Chamberlain, who's a decorated United States Marine. This man won all kinds of Purple Heart. He won a Purple Heart, decorated Marine, and he loses his life at the hands of old racist white punk cop up in upstate New York several years ago, man. Come on, man. Aren't we getting tired of that stuff, man? A decorated Marine, man. This brother got all kinds of awards, and he loses his life at the hands of a white cowardly punk cop. They felt he had to kill at night an 89-year-old black man. Come on, man. Come with this foolishness, man. You know? But thanks, Elliot. Let me stop, man. And thanks to you and Elliot and Richard for letting me just express myself and put me on Elliot, and I'll listen to the rest of the show, brother.
Thanks for your contribution.
You're welcome.
Richard?
Yes.
A lot of information on those two calls. Oh, man, boy, wow. Well, we're right up against it, man, and looking forward to Sunday. You know, as Brother Maurice mentioned about the upcoming convention, I got to reach back out to Brother Bashir Iaconelli, who was one of the organizers along with Brother Ntume, about having him on. Maybe hopefully we can have him for Sunday to kind of talk about the upcoming convention, how it came together, who's involved, all the particulars. I think it'd be a good discussion.
It'd be great.
Well, before we leave this evening, just want to mention, check out from 7 to 9 tomorrow evening on Time for an Awakening Media, the Elders of Sankofa with Brother Alfonso Watkins. Alfonso Watkins as host. Sometimes he's have guest hosts on. He has a pretty interesting program. If you get a chance to hear it, check it out. I know the brother that just called, Brother Joe, he loves the program. He listens to it a lot. So check it out tomorrow evening from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa. And thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. Children, soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. If we know all we children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.